Well, tonight's the All-Star Game, but this morning, the Fantasy All-Star Game. Although, I guess they're not playing, are they, Chris?
They could, if these guys want to show up. Just hang out at the office.
We could simulate it, I suppose. Adam Azer, Chris Dowers here on Tuesday, July 14th. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today. Now, you've got a brief break from it, but once FanDuel and Daily Fantasy resumes, please watch Daily Fantasy Live, DF Live, on CBSSports.com, 4 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. We will help you set your lineup. Just me and Chris today. Chris, you got my list of all-stars, fantasy all-stars.
Yes.
These are guys that I think have outperformed expectations and been amazing.
Provided for the most surplus value.
There you go. I like that. Any snubs, for in your opinion, on my fantasy all-star team?
Nothing that really stands out off the top of my head. I guess, you know, there's some interesting choices, let's say.
Joe Panic was the one who I felt like probably should have made the list, but I was bored talking about him.
Yeah, and the middle infielders that you picked are hard to argue with.
Okay, well, good. Well, thank you very much. And I try to get guys that we haven't talked too much about, so it's a little bit different. Some of the players we'll be talking about today, Stephen Vogt, A.J. Burnett, Kevin Pillar made the Fantasy All-Star team, and Johnny Peralta, and many more. But here's your quote of the day before we get into all that. This is a real All-Star, and he's been a Fantasy All-Star, too. This is Jason Kipnis explaining his good season. Quote, "This game is about constant adjustments. I shortened up my swing and have gotten my hands in a better place, which has gotten me more time to recognize pitches. I don't worry about home runs. I'm 5'10 and a half. I don't need to be swinging for 25 home runs in a year. What works for me is going to the opposite field and staying through the ball. Sticking with that approach has been working for me." Jason Kipnis, 6 home runs and yet one of the top second baseman in fantasy. A lot of extra base hits, not necessarily home runs.
A lot of extra base hits, a lot of just regular hits. He's hitting .323, and God, he's got to be hitting like .360, .370 since the end of April, right?
Yeah, he was batting .218 at the end of April. And it just hasn't stopped. You know, I'm waiting for this extended cold streak from Kipnis because that's who he's been in the past.
Yeah.
But I think it's, look, he might go cold, but any hitter could go cold. I think he's going to be really good in the second half. I'm not worried about Kipnis as a Kipnis owner. I think he's arrived, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing about him is when you look at, you know, his swinging data, you're not seeing him take more pitches. You're not seeing him only swing at pitches inside the zone. He's actually swinging at slightly more pitches outside of the zone, which you would think would be a bad thing, but the rate of contact that he's making has jumped up from 82% to 86%, so he's just making a lot more contact this season.
Yeah, and he's got a very good walk-to-strikeout ratio. Kipnis, yep. 42 walks, 59 strikeouts, 27 doubles, 6 triples. So enjoy.
I was hoping that would be, before I saw who it was, I was hoping that quote would be about like Todd Frazier just getting really in-depth on the home run derby, because that's always my favorite thing about that. It's like the really self-serious, unself-conscious, like, analysis of the home run derby.
Did he give that or no? Did anybody give
that?
No, that's
what I was hoping for, though.
So you enjoyed the home run derby?
It's great fun. It always is.
I have to disagree with that. I had lost interest. I'm glad they changed the format.
Last night was great.
I heard it was great, and I am sorry I missed it. I only saw one round. I saw the Rizzo-Donaldson round, and it was cool. I liked the change. I think it was good. I'm glad people really enjoyed it. Matt Snyder on our website said it was the best home run derby ever.
Every round came down to one or two home runs. Every round was very close. I'm glad they shortened it because of the weather. 5 minutes would have been way too long.
Oh, they shortened it from 5 to 4?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it worked out great. I was a big fan of that.
Yeah, maybe they'll just keep it at 4 next year. Okay, good. I'm glad. You know, I was thinking the home run derby and the slam dunk contests, just people love to rip them. And it's like, what do you expect at this point? We've seen it over and over again. But good change by Major League Baseball. Good season for Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball. They have shortened the games very effectively. And they have improved the home run derby, apparently. Now, what's next, Chris? Get rid of the All-Star game deciding home field advantage.
Yeah, and maybe let's make it so that, like, people actually know who, like, Mike Trout is.
Yeah, they need to market their stars better.
I feel like if you just grabbed a person on the street and asked them, hey, is this Mike Trout? And showed them like a picture of Mike Trout and a picture of me. I feel like they wouldn't know. Like they wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
You know, if they know, it's probably because they've seen the Subway commercials.
Right? That's like our biggest star in baseball is best known for doing Subway commercials.
Yeah, it's not. It's been like that for a while. I always felt that way about Jose Bautista when he was at the top of his game. Did anybody actually know who Jose Bautista was?
Okay, they got him. And he follows every single person in America on Twitter.
Apparently. I have to. You know what? I'm going to follow him on Twitter right now and see if by the end of the show I get followed back.
Oh, he doesn't follow you already?
He might, for all I know, but yeah. I don't think so. Does he follow you?
Yeah. Come on. I'm on the inside of the Jose Bautista circle.
Okay. Well, that's my goal for the next, however long, 45 minutes, is to get followed by Jose Bautista. I am now one of 708,000 followers of Jose Bautista who does not follow me. Okay. Tweet of the day is from Ryan. He says, the running clock keeps my interest longer than years past, and the head-to-head format is pretty cool. Head-to-head is greater than Roto, LOL, even in the home run derby. So I thought we could have a little discussion about our favorite format here. What's your favorite format, Chris?
Head-to-head categories.
Me too!
It's more fun. Like, Roto is... I know Roto's the purest form of fantasy baseball, but it's boring.
I agree.
It's a really long season. What's that?
I don't like it at all. It is too long. I mean, because you don't have playoffs, so it feels even longer, and people give up, and I don't know. I like going against somebody head-to-head.
One specific thing that I have to say. You get one win for the week. None of this, like, you win six categories,
six wins. No, not at all.
You get one win for the week. That is my line in the sand.
No. Oh, I think you're so wrong about this.
No, six wins in a week is stupid.
No, I think it's you get rewarded for having a big week.
You get a win, you get a win. It doesn't matter. What does Dom from Fast and the Furious say? You know the line.
I've never seen Fast and
Furious. It doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, Adam. Winning's winning.
I would have to disagree with that because then, so at least in a head-to-head points league or something, you can have a tiebreaker be most points scored. You know, even when you get one win a week or one loss a week in head-to-head categories league, if I win 7-3 and I only get one win out of it, I'm only 1-0 instead of 7-3, I wasn't rewarded for a strong week.
That's exactly how head-to-head works.
No.
You get one win.
Yeah,
you get
one, but at least there
you get one win. You don't, no. It doesn't matter. The Blue Jays can beat the Red Sox by 15. They don't get 15. This isn't NBA Summer League.
Okay, well,
you don't get a point for winning a quarter.
At least we're on the same page with head-to-head categories. I will say this. If there were a way to do points for hitters and categories for pitchers, I'd be all about that. Because I think the five basic categories for pitchers is more or less all-encompassing. If you want to throw quality starts in there or something like that, that's great. But... or holds, if you so desire. But hitting, just, you need more than five categories. It's just too basic.
Yeah.
So, points leagues work so well for me for hitting. But for pitching, you know, I think the standard format of 7 points for a win, I think that's too much. I don't know. And then some leagues I'm in are 10 points for a win. I just think that's crazy. We get a lot of emails, 10 points, 15 points for a win. Nobody can ever seem to figure that out.
Yeah, wins are silly.
Yeah, wins.
They're just an inherently silly stat.
Let's go to the injuries, news, and notes. Then we'll do the All-Stars. Then we'll read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Definitely want to take a lot of time this week to read emails. So send them in, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Put baseball podcast in the subject line. Right about now, we're getting a lot of football podcast emails as well. So they all go to my same inbox. If you could put baseball podcast or something baseball related in the subject line, that would be helpful. And the... you know, we get, I don't know, 60% of our emails are grade the trade, which doesn't really help a lot of people, so the more general, the better. We'll grade some trades, though. Todd Frazier won the home run derby. Good for him. He's on the all-star team. We'll talk about him, the fantasy all-star team, and the real one. Jay Bruce is available in trade, according to John Heyman. He is the number 25 outfielder in points leagues, number 35 in Roto. Now, Chris, I didn't realize it until I went and looked it up, but Jay Bruce is a big home-road split kind of guy. career on the road, he has a .425 slugging percentage. His OPS is over 1,000 points. No, that can't be right.
Probably. Yeah, you put better. It's just over 1,000 points at home. Over 1,000 OPS at home.
Is it?
I believe that has to be. I can't imagine maybe he has a 1,700 OPS at home.
No, maybe it's over 100 points better. I'm going to look it up again. But the bottom line is he is a much better player in Cincinnati, which makes sense. So I actually think this is a guy whose value in fantasy could be affected by a trade. And Bruce has been really good, well, pretty good since a cold start.
Yeah, I think a lot of it will obviously depend on where he ends up. If he ends up in a place that that saps left-handed power hitting, yeah, it's obviously going to hurt him. But if there are some parks out there that can give hitters a boost offensively beyond the Great American Ballpark, so I don't think it's a given, but it'll obviously depend on where he goes.
We will talk about trades tomorrow, guys who could be on the move. Houston could be very interested in Johnny Cueto, according to John Heyman. Martin Perez is going to start Friday for the Rangers at Houston. Are you interested at all in Martin Perez?
You know, I know this is a guy who was a big-time prospect for a long time, but his minor league numbers are so bleh. Just like 4.18 minor league ERA. Never had really big strikeout numbers. Came to the majors, had one decent season, never had great peripherals, though. I'm not too interested in him, no.
Jay Bruce's career OPS at home is .846. It's yeah. .739 on the road. So it is over 100 points better at home. Matt Holliday made it clear he will not play first base, although that would really make sense for the Cardinals. But he ain't a first baseman, so he's not going to play there. Go sign up, play FanDuel right now. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner when you go to FanDuel.com and enter the offer code CBSPOD, and you're going to get that special offer from FanDuel. They're going to match your first deposit, dollar for dollar, up to $200. Again, use that offer code CBSPOD. Go to FanDuel.com, start playing right now. You can play for as cheap as $1. You can play any day you want. You can play multiple times a day. You can play in tournaments with thousands of people and win big prizes. Or you can do 50-50s where half of, let's say, 100 contestants win some money. You can play against your friends in a head-to-head. A lot of cool things you can do. And FanDuel's not just baseball. There's football. There's basketball. There's hockey. There's a lot of things. So go on there and try it out. FanDuel.com. Time for the Fantasy All-Stars, Chris.
Yeah.
Here we go. Steven Vogt. I did a two-catcher league for some reason. Steven Vogt and Russell Martin are the number 2 and number 3 catchers in fantasy. They are obvious All-Stars. And do you think they will be fantasy all-stars in the second half for their owners?
Well, I guess the argument against Russell Martin, to start with him would be he only hit 11 home runs last season. He's hit 12 this season. Maybe the power slows down. Maybe the run production slows down. He's already scored more runs than he did a year ago. He's only 26 RBI short. Maybe it's the argument would be he's going to, but this is what the Blue Jays do, right?
Well, he's got a .940 OPS at home and a .669 OPS on the road. So it seems plausible that Martin could have a good power / run production year in Toronto. And remember, he hit 18 home runs with the Yankees and 21 home runs with the Yankees. So I'm not too surprised that the power is back, but he only was batting .237 and .211 in those years with the Yankees. Where's the batting average come from? Martin's batting .251 on the year, which isn't great, but only .130 in his last 17 games.
So, yeah, I'm not so worried about the batting average regressing. It only comes with a .282 BABIP. It's not like his strikeout rate is way up. It's basically where it was in those Yankees years.
Yeah, .251's not anything special.
Yeah, I think it's passable at catcher with his power, with his run production, with the lineup that he hits in. The only thing I would say is it's possible the Blue Jays lineup won't be quite as good. Just because they have been the best in baseball, and I guess you could look at them and say maybe they could regress a little bit offensively, and that'll impact his runs and RBI production. But I'm not that worried about them. I think they really are, you know, one of the best lineups in baseball.
And Martin leads all catchers with 49 runs and 4 steals, and you know that's also significant. And I whiffed on him because I just really didn't think I thought he was too old. You know, by a catcher standard, Martin's kind of old.
Yeah.
You know, so He's having a good year. Steven Vogt.
He's also old. Old for a breakout, huh? 30?
Is he 30? I didn't even know that.
He'll turn 31 at the end of the season, November 1st. But I'm not... You know, I look at him. I've looked at him a bunch of times this season. I buy it. You know, maybe not number two catcher, but I definitely think I buy him being one of the best offensive catchers in baseball right now, assuming he can stay healthy.
So the thing with catcher, we've talked about it. It's a really shallow position this year. I think there are only 10 guys that you're going to be excited about having on your team, and those would be, in some order, Posey, Vogt, Lucroy, Gattis, Salvador Perez, Martin, McCann, Grandal, Wieters, Gomes, and then I guess we should throw Darnot in there, and Derek Norris. Okay, so Derek Norris honestly makes it 12.
Yeah.
I don't really like Derek Norris that much, but he's obviously startable. And Darnot's not back yet, but, you know, it's hard to trade catchers because it's hard. You can't, like, go to waivers and replace them. But I'm a little more worried about Vogt than you are just because he's been so banged up, and it's starting to show. Since June 1st, Steven Vogt has hit .246 with a .369 slugging percentage. He scored, where's the stat? He scored 17 fantasy points or more in 7 of his first 8 weeks, but Vogt's only done that once in his last 6 weeks. And even if you play in Roto, that's still... Those fantasy points still a good measure of how he's been hitting. So we're already seeing decline from Vogt.
In fairness, 17's a pretty high bar.
Right.
What does it look like if you set it at 10?
Well, I don't want 10 points a week. That's not very good.
I mean, out of the catcher position, it's not great, but it's workable.
All right, so that's 260 fantasy points a year?
Yeah.
All right, I'll just see what that was last year.
My thing with him is the emergence of Josh Fegley means that they should be able to caddy Vogt more. They can move him to first base. They can move him to the outfield. They can get a time in DH. So I'm not the injury history definitely concerns me, but I don't think I wouldn't definitely be looking to trade him. I can see an argument for it. I just really think the bat is legitimate.
And you know what? It's a good point you make about caddying him, because I think he's clearly so much better than Ike Davis and should be playing more first base.
Yeah.
You know, even when there's a righty on the mound, just give him a break. All right, 260 fantasy points. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That would have been 12th best.
Yeah, so you're still starting him in most leagues, and that's I think that's his floor, right? Assuming hell.
That's, I think, floor. Yeah, it's probably lower than his floor. It's not very good. So
yeah. So if his floor is the 12th best catcher in baseball, I think I'm pretty happy holding on to him.
Mark Teixeira is our fantasy all-star at first base. He is the number 8 first baseman in points, number 9 in Roto. And Scott recently had him as a sell-high candidate. And I agreed with it. But I don't really think he's doing anything that can't be sustained. He's only hitting .240 with 22 home runs, a real 62 RBI. That's really good.
And he's already matched his total from last season in RBI and home runs.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. But he's doing it with a .240 batting average instead of a .216 batting average, and really good walk to strikeout ratio, almost 1-to-1. I don't know. What do you think about Tex?
The biggest thing is the power pace isn't going to continue, and I don't think anybody expects him to continue a 40 homer pace, but it's really hard. I guess it's hard to sell high on him because anybody who would trade for him knows exactly what you do about him. He's playing a little over his head. He's injury prone. He's bound to get hurt at some point. So it's hard to say how much value you can wring from him, right?
Yeah, except I think since he does play a deep position, it's possible that you already have a good first baseman, and you should, if that's the case, you should probably look to sell Teixeira and get value somewhere else. And I think the thing with Teixeira is that I expect him to if he stays healthy, when he plays, I think he'll play well. But I just think there are first basemen behind him that will pass him in the rankings. Like, obviously, look, you'd rather have Edwin Encarnacion than Mark Teixeira, right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of guys behind him. Victor Martinez is going to pass him in the rankings. So he's not going to be the number 8 fantasy first baseman at the end of the season because he's pretty much reached his ceiling in the first half. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing I look at is he's got a 23.4% home run to fly ball rate with a 33.5 hard hit percentage. Those two things correlate very highly, and his hard hit percentage has actually gone down from last season. He's making less hard contact, but he's hitting more home runs. So that to me says that we'll see some regression in his home run to fly ball ratio.
So I'd trade him right now for Carlos Santana. It's certainly in points. Not 100% sure about Roto. What about you?
I mean, we're buying this Carlos Santana second half breakout thing, right?
I buy it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would do that.
Second baseman, didn't go with Joe Panik, went with Colton Wong, who we haven't really talked about a lot. And he's having a somewhat quiet but good, solid, productive year. He is the number 6 second baseman in points leagues. Wong is number 5 in Roto. 24 years old. Little bit of slump right now. 12 straight games without an extra base hit, but 9 home runs, 10 steals in 14 attempts in the first half. And, yeah, 280 batting average. Nothing spectacular, but a nice solid year for Colton Wong.
And it's interesting. He comes up, last season with a bunch of hype, and he's just okay. He's not very good, but he was a playable middle infielder, for stretches. And then this season, he's been way better, and we aren't really talking about him. The prospect hype cycle is so interesting to me. But I think he's really good.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything in his line that I can see that would necessarily suggest that some big regression's coming. I think he can be a top 5-ish second baseman.
I think it's reasonable that the entire lineup could do better when Holiday comes back, which should be Friday. And hopefully Wong will continue to hit in front of Matt Holliday, but we'll have to see what they do with the batting order. Todd Frazier, very interesting here. Number 1 third baseman in fantasy. What you've got right now at third base is Frazier, Donaldson, Arenado, and Machado, way ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
Chris Bryant got a little bit of a late start, so maybe on a per-game basis he could be in that equation too, but Alex Rodriguez is pretty much the next third baseman in line, and we know he hasn't been nearly as good as Frazier, Donaldson, Arenado, and Machado. So Frazier has a history. Last 3 years, here are the splits. OPS by half. 2012, 901 OPS in the first half, 775 in the second half. 2013, just kind of a bad year. 730 in the first half, 708 in the second half. 2014, 853 OPS in the first half, 707 in the second half. It's consistent, but he is having his best year yet. So what do you think for the second half for Todd Frazier?
I don't think he's the best third baseman. I think I'd rather have Donaldson. I'm a little surprised Donaldson actually ranks behind him, but I think Donaldson's clearly a better player. But I have a hard time putting Arenado or Machado ahead of Frazier, even with knowing that he's probably playing over his head a little bit. The big thing for me is this is all fueled by a big power surge, 25 home runs in 85 games. His career high is 29. He's going to get that. At this pace, he'll get that by next week. But his fly ball rate is way up. It's not like he's hitting more of his fly balls for home runs. He's just hitting a ton of fly balls. 48.6% fly ball percentage, which is up from his career average of 41.1%. So I can see the power, maybe not continuing at this pace, but I could see him hitting another 15 home runs.
Is there any way we could incorporate the home run derby into fantasy? Like if you draft a guy and he gets to the home run derby, you get like
I'd love to do that.
5 extra home runs. You couldn't give him all the home runs they hit in the maybe you could. Maybe you divide all the home runs they hit by like 4 or something. And just
that'd be fun, man.
It would be ridiculous. But you would have
he
to
hit
predict
like 40 last would, night, I think.
You would have to predict who's going to the derby, which means you would certainly want to pick someone for someone whose hometown is hosting the All-Star game. That'd be fun. I would never be in a league like that because I think it would be totally stupid. But if you're crazy and have that fantasy wild side in you, Could be fun. All right, so what would you do with Frazier then if you're the owner? Would you hold on to him? Would you try to sell him? You could get so much for him right now.
Third base is a really deep position, which helps. Chances are you might have... I mean, you drafted Todd Frazier with the expectation that he'd be your starter anyway, so it's not like you... You know, it's not like a situation where you drafted Kyle Seager and you have Michael Franco or something. Like, you drafted Todd Frazier knowing he was going to be your third baseman, and you probably haven't been, you know, looking for a third baseman. So it depends on what your situation is, whether you have another one. I don't think I'm trading him.
All right, would you do this? Would you do Todd Frazier for Carlos Santana and...
You gotta hit me with a really
Jake
good
start. Arrieta.
Sure.
How about Matt Carpenter and someone in the Arrieta range, but slightly worse. Can you think of anyone? Carlos Carrasco for Todd Frazier.
I think. I don't know, because Carpenter's been kind of meh for
I don't think
a while.
I'd do it in a roto league, because Carpenter's not that great in that format.
Yeah.
He's got no power lately.
Yeah, I think I'd have to pass on that. But that's the right, like, you need another starting third baseman and, like, a high-end number two starting pitcher, I think.
Let's get to our fantasy all-star at shortstop. It's Johnny Peralta, number one in points, number three in roto. And I don't really think there's anything that Peralta is doing this year that is... Kind of like what we said with Cole Wallace, that he can't keep doing.
Yeah, that's what, two Cardinals in here?
Yeah. It's like the real all-star team.
It's the best fans in baseball. No, I mean, he's been...
I didn't let anyone vote on this, though. Just
he's
so you
been
know.
Exactly what he was last year, basically.
Yeah.
The BABIP is a little higher, but the strikeout rate, the walk rate, the batted ball tendencies are all pretty much in the neighborhood of what he's done in the past. He's not going to hit 298.
He might. It's three out of the last 5 years he's hit right around 300. If you include this year,
yeah.
Then four of the last five seasons, Peralta has had an OPS between 779 and 828. And three of those five between 815 and 828. So I thought maybe he'd sell high, but I don't really see it with Peralta. I think he'll score runs, he'll drive in runs just being in that lineup, and the batting average might come down a little bit.
That's the only thing I could see. If you're asking me what about his season so far will not continue in the second half, I would guess he won't hit for quite so high an average.
All right, but I like Peralta. I think if you've got
he's
him,
very good.
You're very happy with him. We'll get to the outfield in a second, but I do need to tell everybody that fantasy football is coming up, and we have evidence of this, because if you go to fantasynews.cbsports.com, the homepage is now football and no longer baseball. We still love baseball, though. We won't forget
about baseball. It's July. It's football season.
Yeah, but this season, if you want to run your fantasy league, do it the right way. Do it with CBS Sports Commissioner. You'll have instant access to our latest updates and advice, and you'll receive exclusive player rewards, including a free draft kit app, discounted team gear, and plenty more. So start your league now at cbssports.com/play. cbssports.com/play. And for more of our tips and advice, you can get the CBS Sports Fantasy Football Draft Guide. Over 150 pages of rankings, cheat sheets, sleepers, breakouts, busts. You know how it is. Great stuff with the draft guide. If you want that, you go to cbssports.com/draft. So cbssports.com/play. To get your special offer, and cbssports.com/draft to get the draft guide. So, yeah, fantasy football is awesome. And listen to the podcast, because it's very fun as well. To the outfield! I'll speed things up here, as I like to do. We got Brett Gardner, AJ Pollock, and Kevin Pillar. Gardner and Pollock are top 7 outfielders. Pillar, believe it or not, is a top 25 outfielder with a 719 OPS, which gives you an idea of how stacked outfield is at the top and how mediocre it is once you get to like the 20s. But let's start with Gardner and Pollock. Do you think either of these guys are sell high candidates?
I think Gardner is for sure. I know He's someone that we've talked about a lot, so I don't want to spend too much time on him. But there are some real signs of regression that are screaming at me.
Regression!
The average. What's that?
I was just screaming regression at you.
Yeah, exactly. The average is way higher than anybody can reasonably expect for him. It's not like he's striking out less. It's not like he's making better contact. His hard hit average is down below 30% for the third year in a row. He's someone that if I could move and get top 10 outfield return for him,
yeah,
I would absolutely do that.
Yeah, it's tough. I want to keep Gardner on my teams. I have him on three teams. He's been so good, but it just, I can't believe that a guy with that kind of speed has never hit better than 277 in a full season, but Gardner's doing it this year at 302. Look, here's the thing. He's still a good player. Even if the batting average comes down, he's been underrated in fantasy. I've made the case year after year. He's underrated. He's top 30 every year, but this year he's top 7. So.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is I think he's more of a top 20 outfielder rather than a top 8 outfielder.
Pollock is doing what he did last year, a little bit worse actually, which is, you know.
Yeah, I actually do see. I guess if you're worried about, I don't know, playing time, if you're worried about injury, but beyond that, he's been pretty much exactly the same guy he was last season. I think we talked about that last week. I don't see any specific reasons to not buy into him. Maybe not as a, what is he, top 6 outfielder? I think that's way too high, but another guy that, like, top 15, top 20 is absolutely possible, and I think he ranked pretty high in fantasy points per game last season, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, he was really good last year.
And so this seems to be his skill level. The Diamondbacks are playing him pretty much every day now after some kind of frustrating times early in the season. So I feel comfortable rolling with him. I don't necessarily think, unlike Gardner, I think there's more sustainable about what he's doing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think there's two things, though, with both of these guys. There's one thing with both of these guys that doesn't get talked about enough during draft season. But that is the most underrated stat in fantasy, in my opinion, runs. And these two guys are among the leaders at the outfield position, and probably in all positions, in runs scored. Brett Gardner has the second most runs scored at the outfield position, and I think Pollock has the fourth most. And that will help their value rest of season.
The argument that I would say is that runs can be a little random.
Yeah, but I totally buy it with both of them. I think they're both going to score a lot of runs.
I mean, they're both good base runners. They both get on base at a decent clip.
And they're both in good lineups, especially Gardner.
Yeah. Pollock, it's not such a great lineup, but they do have, you know, arguably the second best hitter in baseball behind him, so that helps a lot.
Right. It's good at the top.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Pilar,
Pilar.
Yeah, this is one of those ones where the fact that he's top 25 defies explanation. Like, you look for a reason for it, and I guess it's the fact that he has 48 runs scored in 90 games.
Did you know that?
That's the biggest thing I can point to as to why he ranks so highly. Other than that, he's not really spectacular anywhere.
It is weird that Pilar is only slugging 377 at home. 434 on the road, so you could argue that he could do even better. Last 41 games, Pilar's batting .353 with a .388 BABIP. He also has 6 steals in those 41 games. I don't know. If he were sitting there on waivers, I probably wouldn't pick him up. He's 90% owned, Pilar, but unless it were my 16-team leagues, I guess my Roto 5 outfielder leagues, I'd pick him
up. But I'm definitely not counting on him as a starting option for the rest of the season.
Okay, so that's it for our hitters. Did you know that Arizona has scored the 6 most runs in baseball?
That is very surprising.
In fact, they are the National League leaders. They've scored the 5th most runs in baseball and the most in the National League.
That is very surprising.
Yeah. So how about that? And one of the most amazing stats is that the Blue Jays have scored 77 more runs than the Yankees. Who are second.
And that's why I was saying there's a little room for them to come back down to earth as far as runs scored, just because they're so much better. But they are an incredibly talented offense regardless. So it's not like it's a given.
All right, so I'm going to do some quick math here. The Blue Jays have scored 77 more runs than the number two run scoring team in baseball. That's the Yankees. The Yankees have scored 70-ish more runs than, or 69 more runs than the Marlins, who are the fifth lowest scoring team in baseball.
They are bad.
So they're the same amount of runs separate number one and number two from number two and number 26.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Just about the same amount. And we move on to our pitching staff. Here are your fantasy all-stars, Dallas Keuchel and Zach Greinke. We'll start with those two. We got five starters and two relievers. Keuchel is top three. Greinke's top three. Pretty good stuff so far from those two. Can either of these guys be seen as overachievers in our first half?
At the risk of saying something blindingly obvious, Zach Greinke is the most obvious sell-high candidate in fantasy baseball right now.
Really? Okay.
He's got a 1.39 ERA.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
So, but sell-high to what? I mean, if you can get, like, Felix Hernandez, somebody like that, sure. But what do you expect from Greinke in the second half? I think something telling here is that he stranded 90% of his runners. And
yeah, I mean, where was Greinke ranked coming into the season?
Well, a lot of people thought Al was too low on Greinke.
Mm-hmm.
I think Al had him in the 20s. Scott probably had him in the teens. The thing with Greinke is that he's had a 2.63 and a 2.71 ERA in his 2 years with the Dodgers. So
yeah, he's good.
I can't see him being any worse than that from this
point
on.
He's good. He doesn't pitch huge inning totals. He doesn't get big strikeout totals. He'll get a lot of wins on a team that's going to win a lot of games. But if you could get Jacob DeGrom and a piece, I think you would have to do it.
Yeah. I think there's room for a regression for Greinke. BABIP right now is 235. This is a guy who has a career BABIP of 305, and it's never been lower than 269, which was his BABIP, in his 2004 rookie season. So that's ridiculously low. And the strand rate, 89.5%, that's crazy, but it was 80% each of the past two seasons, so he's pretty good at pitching at a jams.
Yeah, I would say he's more likely to finish with an ERA over 3. I mean, this is, from this point on, I think he's more likely to be around 3 than around 2, which is, again, it's a stupidly obvious thing to say, because nobody posts ERAs around 2 unless you're Clayton Kershaw. But, like, if someone really does view him as like a top three pitcher, I would try to wring as much value out of him as I could.
And Keuchel, what do you view him as?
See, Keuchel, again, he's pitching over his head, but he's a guy that what I love about him is 30 straight starts with at least 6 innings pitched. You know, wow. He doesn't have great strikeout rates, but he is probably the best ground ball pitcher in baseball at this point. I just think a lot of what he does well is pretty sustainable. He's not, in Roto, the fact that he doesn't strike a lot of guys out is concerning, but the Astros are a very good team. He's going to win games. He's going to keep the ball in the park. I like him more than Greinke.
Now, Hector Santiago, AJ Burnett, and Dan Herron, believe it or not, round out our pitching staff here. And I want to start with Hector Santiago. He's got a 2.33 ERA and a 3.91 FIP. Why do you suppose that is, Statman?
Let me take a look at Hector.
Because this could be a really great excuse for me to just rip FIP again.
I mean, the one thing that comes out right away is that he gives up a ton of fly balls.
Mm-hmm. And a decent amount of home runs, 1.1 home runs per 9 innings.
And that's with an 8.4 home run to fly ball rate, which you would assume is lower, and that's what XFIP is trying to take into account. Although he has been he's a pitcher who's pitched better than his FIP and his XFIP in, this is going on 4 seasons now. So I think you can definitely expect him to continue to outperform that. Like, he's, for some reason, I don't know specifically what the mechanics of it would be, but he generates weak contact.
Well, I think he's a good pitcher. This is a guy that I liked a lot last year. I talked about it all the time. He was a guy that I was drafting. I didn't want to give up on, but he just had a terrible year. And the reason I liked Hector Santiago, 2012, so he pitched for the White Sox in 2012 mm-hmm. and 2013. That's a terrible ballpark. But on the road in 2012, he had a 2.61 ERA in only 31 innings. 2013 on the road, he had a 3.12 ERA in 80 and two-thirds innings. So my thought was, he'll go to the Angels, pitch in a much better park, and just have a really solid year. And it didn't happen. He was awful. I don't really see a reason why he can't have a solid year. 2.33 ERA obviously seems like he's overachieving. But the walks have gone down every year, and that's been the thing with him. He's been such a bad walk guy. But here's the walk rate for Santiago in his four seasons in the big leagues. 5.1, 4.3, 3.7, down to 2.8 this year. So he says his mechanics have improved. He knows his body better. And I think Santiago is going to be a good pitcher this season. Not this good, but I could see him having a low 3s ERA from here on.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Low 3s more than low 2s for sure. But, you know, low 3s is good.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with that team, he can get some wins. He has pretty good strikeout numbers. 98 in 108 and a third.
I would say I would expect something in the low 3s, but the home run potential makes him, it gives him some boom or bust potential for sure. Like, there's a chance that things go off the rails and he starts giving up a ton of home runs.
How about A.J. Burnett and Dan Haran, who's actually a top 30 starting pitcher? Do you think those guys are legit? Burnett's top 20, Haran's top 30 right now.
Well, the thought with Haran coming into the season was that the move to Marlins Park, the big spacious ballpark, good defensive outfield, good defensive infield, would serve him well, and that's exactly what's happened. I think the fact that he seems as likely as anyone in baseball to be traded in the next 2 weeks means if I could possibly sell high on him, and I don't know if I could, I would absolutely try to.
The last four road starts for Dan Haran, 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs at the Mets, 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs at the Blue Jays, 6 yeah. and a third, 2 earned at the Reds, and 6 innings, 1 earned at Boston. 3 terrible pitcher's parks, and 3 yeah. awesome starts in a row, and of course that first one was at the Mets. It's a good park and a bad lineup, so that made sense. But I'm not going to sit here and say he's turned a corner and is going to be good no matter where he goes. Just because of this four-start road stretch, you know?
Yeah, I just think he's the same league average pitcher he's been the last, like, 3 or 4 seasons. And at some point, it's going to catch up to him. Those home run or the fly balls, the home run issues that he had early in the season, he ended up having just a really high proportion of his home runs early in the season come with nobody on base. Mm. And I don't think that's necessarily skill.
How about A.J. Burnett? I think it's pretty hard to doubt him at this point.
A lot like Hector Santiago, it depends on what you mean. If I don't doubt that he can be like a low to mid 3s ERA pitcher.
Oh, I think he could be. I think he could be sub 3. I really don't see why not, Chris. I mean, just this is what he does on the Pirates.
Well. Sure, he had a 3.30 ERA the last time he was on the Pirates. He had a 3.51 ERA last time he was on the Pirates. So.
All right, well, I guess I was. Overexcited there.
No, he was good. He was a top. That can put him in position to be a top 30, 35 pitcher, starting pitcher. It's just not what he's been.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I thought it was better, so I apologize for that. Yeah, he hasn't had an ERA better than 3.30 since. Ever. He's never had an ERA under 3.30. Wow. 2002 yeah. with the Marlins, 12-9 with a 3.30 ERA, and 2013 with the Pirates, 10-11, 3.30 ERA. So there does seem to be some regression, some room for regression there, because Burnett has a 2.11 ERA. But probably a guy you're still going to start most weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, our two closers, Jairys Familia and Brad Boxberger. And I picked Boxberger because I was surprised he's a top 12 closer right now. Not top 12 relief pitcher if you're looking in points league because I took the Sparps out, but yeah. a top 12 closer, and Familia's number one.
Familia's really good. He had a 2.21 ERA last year. He gets a lot of strikeouts. He's not not an elite strikeout pitcher, but with the combination of his strikeouts and his ground ball tendency, it plays up. But I don't think there's, I think there's a 0% chance he's the top closer in baseball from this point on.
It's all about that, save opportunities.
What?
It's all about save opportunities. And actually, exactly, with that starting rotation, I could still see him getting a lot.
Yeah, but I just, you know, we talked about this yesterday. I would say that save opportunities are fairly random. You know, you'll see guys go 5 in 1 week and then 1 in the next. They're pretty up and down. So I would default to guys that I think are better pitchers, even though I do think he can be he is a very good relief pitcher right now.
And Boxberger 80% owned, so if he's available, you want
to. It's hard to trade closers, but I wouldn't be shocked if he's not the closer by August 1st.
If he's,
I think Jake
not?
McGee's a better pitcher.
I do too.
But the Rays are the kind of organization that might acknowledge that Jake McGee's the better pitcher and leave him out of the closer's role because they like to have him available earlier than the ninth inning. But Boxberger's good.
Yeah, he's good. But
there's a better chance he's not getting saves than. Not that there's a 50% chance he's not getting saves by the end of the year.
McGee is so good. McGee is an elite reliever. All right, let's read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Mike in Milwaukee. Hello, Turley, Wynn, and Ford. Some Hall of Fame pitchers there.
Okay.
It's a travesty that Clayton Kershaw is not an all-star. Editor's note here, he is actually an all-star.
He is now an all-star.
Yeah. We've all debated about the ridiculousness of fan voting in light of the Royals stack. A motivated fan base should not be the driver of all-star game starters. I have a discussion starter on potential fixes. First of all, the previous year's Cy Young winner should be automatically given the start of the all-star game. This should include relievers if they win the award. I doubt any pitcher would pass up on the opportunity to start the all-star game after winning the Cy Young. Second, the previous year's MVPs are also given a guaranteed ticket to the game. Third, the previous year's rookie of the years are also included. Fan votes should not go away, sorry Chris, but it's good to engage the base for the sport, but it should be weighted with previous World Series coaches getting the final roster selection.
I actually like two of those three suggestions. I don't care for the Rookie of the Year one because we've seen a lot of pretty bad players win Rookie of the Year on a couple hot months. You know, Chris Coughlin is the most obvious one that I can think of in recent years, but there are others. I like rewarding the Cy Young and MVP winners because I think the All-Star Game should be about the stars. Like, it's a very reductive way to view it, but I just, the idea that one fan base can decide that a certain player does or doesn't get into the All-Star game, like, it just bothers me. I want to see the best, most entertaining players play in the game, and I think part of the problem with MLB is that they don't market their stars that well. Nobody wants to see Omar Infante in the All-Star game, and I know he didn't make it, but like, that was like a worst case scenario. Like, I was hoping he would get in just so he could get rid of fan voting.
Reductive. Tending to present a subject or problem in a simplified form, especially one viewed as crude.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, thank you for a new word for me.
Yeah, that's our SAT word.
I've never said reductive before, and now I have. I like that. I don't agree with what you've said.
Well,
I think that the All-Star game should be about the players who have had the best first halves in baseball that particular year.
Yeah, but see, stupid things happen in 2 months, you know? And plus, we start voting in, like, May.
Well, that is obviously a problem. And I went and voted online, and it's a ploy to get you to sign up for things on MLB.com. Here, give us your email address so we can send you all this crap. Do you want to be registered for this? Like, come on, it's ridiculous. Like, it's fine. It's not like a totally flawed process or anything, but there's obviously incentive for them to get you voting early and 37 times.
My biggest thing is just we use this to like judge players. Like when it comes to like their Hall of Fame worthiness, we'll look at it and say, well, you know, X player only made the All-Star game 3 times. How can he really be a Hall of Famer? But it's like he didn't play for the Royals. Or he didn't play for the Cardinals, you know? Like, that's...
Yeah,
it's
well,
that kind of thing.
I think we've moved past that, luckily, with the voters. They're smart enough. But I have no problem with it being the first half best players, because for the most part, you're going to get really good players in the All-Star game. And you know what? It's if those guys have had great first halves, they deserve to go to the All-Star game. You can't tell them, well, sorry, you're not established enough, Carlos Martinez, even though you were better than Kershaw so far. Kershaw's Kershaw, so you have to sit home. Sorry.
But, like, Kershaw is Kershaw.
That doesn't matter. He hasn't been as good as Carlos Martinez, so he doesn't get to go. I mean, it turns out they both get to go, but that's the case. All right, well, I've said my piece. Kobe from Pennsylvania. Dear Colin, Taylor, and Rachel. I don't know who those people are, but I'll look it up. Just listen to the Monday podcast. One question. How do you not talk about the Pirates' last two games versus the Cardinals? That is all. Love the show. Give us some love.
True Detective.
What, season two?
Colin Farrell, Rachel McAdams, and Taylor Kitsch.
I don't know who Taylor...
Taylor Kitsch.
I didn't
Tim
know
Riggins.
That was his name.
Texas Forever.
Well, listen. I haven't seen the Sunday's episode, but I said it on the football podcast. I'll say it on the baseball podcast. This season of True Detective is so awful.
Yeah, if it wasn't called True Detective, nobody would be watching.
Thank you. It's the only reason people are watching True Detective Season 2 is True Detective Season 1.
I will say all the actors, well, the three ones that are mentioned in this email have been, for the most part, very good.
Ah, I don't like their characters. They're all losers.
Yeah, well, it's an L.A. noir thing, and they're all flawed people, and that's the whole thing. But I think they're giving it their all, and I think Vince Vaughn is, bless his heart, he's trying. But his character's so bad.
Noir, a genre of crime film or fiction characterized by cynicism, fatalism, and moral ambiguity.
Right? That's exactly what it is.
Thank you, Chris. You are really, you're owning it today. I appreciate it.
No, but I thought coming into this season what they should have done, given Nick Pizzolatto his own show, do whatever you want, Nick, 8 episode, whatever, don't call it True Detective, because it carries so much weight with it.
Yeah, I know. The expectations
And we're expecting, you know, the Yellow King and all this Carcosa stuff.
Now, listen, I'm a little lukewarm, typically speaking, on Ray Donovan. I think it's hit or miss. But the first episode of this season, I think we're on season 3, was amazing.
I haven't seen that show.
It's good. It's good. I have some issues with it, but I like it. But this first episode was great. I think we could be in for a good season. Now, the Cardinals-Pirates games, those were great games. And
yeah, 2 walk-off hits.
That could be a really fun race, and I totally buy the Pirates.
They're what, 2 games back? Game and a half?
I thought it was more like 3.
They're 3 in the win column, 2 in the loss column. I don't know what that comes out to.
That'd
I'm not good at math.
Half,
2 and a half?
Yeah. All right, you do the vocab. I'll do the math.
All right.
Yeah, it's two and a half games. All right, next up, we got a grade the trade from Garrett in Maine. Dear good movie critic, great movie critic, and Royal Homer. Sorry, Heath's not on the show. 16-team, 3 outfielder league, 6x6, with OPS and holds. Give up a $2 Andrew Heaney and a $10 Chris Heston for a $2 Lorenzo Cain and a $10 Yimmy Garcia.
I guess Garcia is good for holds, but he hasn't... He's been a little hit or miss this season.
Not sure I like this.
Yeah, I don't think
Heaney,
I like it.
I think.
I mean, if you need the outfield help, Lorenzo Cain can definitely give you help there. But in a vacuum, I would say it's a C minus.
Cody in Biloxi, Mississippi. Have you ever seen the movie Biloxi Blues?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't. What?
It's a good movie.
It is? Okay. Dear Hotch, Morgan, and Reed, should I trade Hosmer and Hector Santiago for Beltre and Jordan Zimmerman in a 12-team, 5x5 categories league? Quality starts instead of wins. So give up Hosmer and Hector Santiago for Beltre and Zimmerman.
I do kind of like... I would have to... I'm going to make sure, but it from what I can tell, he's had... better strikeout rates recently in his last couple of starts.
Who, Zimmerman?
Yeah.
Okay, Zimmerman had a great three-start stretch against horrible teams, and then he faced a good one at the Orioles, and he was awful. And the point I was going to make is, he is going to face a lot of horrible teams probably the rest of the season. Because
he pitches in the NL East.
That division is just terrible. But I don't really have much faith in Zimmerman. I think I would still do the trade. Hosmer's back to not being
very
good.
Yeah, he's bad.
I'd do it, I guess. Would you?
Yeah, I think the upside's worth it.
Beltre just needs to get that thumb right, because it's still bothering him. But I agree, the upside's worth it. And we've got Phillip. In a shallow league, there has been one trade this year. Everybody uses waiver wire instead of trades. I own Ben Zobrist. Would you drop him for Yasmani Grandal?
He starts Lucroy and Victor Martinez at catcher in first, and Dozier and Correa at second and shortstop. I don't know if Grandal's an improvement over... He's been better than Lucroy, but can you really expect him to be better than Lucroy?
If this is a categories league, I'd probably do it. If it were a points league, that's where Zobrist specializes.
Yeah. I think it's fine. Zobrist is an okay player. He's been really good lately. But so much of his value is the ability to swap him in at different spots, but you're pretty stacked in a bunch of different spots, so I think it's okay to do that.
From Scott, Gray the Trade, Dear Club, Goat, and Bob.
I don't know.
Those are Billy's.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's good.
12-team head-to-head points league. John Lester and Robinson Cano, he wants to get rid of them. So he gives up Lester, Cano, and Kenley Jansen. He gets Kinsler, Jordan Zimmerman, and Trevor Rosenthal in a trade that I truly hate.
Yeah, I think that's really... I think you got the worst of it, possibly in each spot.
I would rather have Kinsler than Cano, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Kinsler's been pretty mediocre this season as well.
Yes, no question. But Lester, to me, is so much better than Jordan Zimmerman.
Yeah.
And I say this, I am such a frustrated Zimmerman owner. I just... He's sinking one of my teams, and I don't know. I guess maybe I'm a little biased because I'm mad at him, but I don't really think he's going to have that good of a finish, especially with the strikeouts.
Yeah, but either way, I think Lester's better than him. I don't like that trade at all. I think it's a D.
And Chris in Washington, D.C. says, "Hey, War, XFIP, and UZR." Very funny. I'm in a 10-team head-to-head points league. I give up Danny Salazar and Julio Teheran. I get Yasiel Puig and Lance Lynn.
I love it.
That's a great trade. Good job.
That's a really good trade. I don't know if it's quite an A, but a solid B+.
So Puig is a guy that you might want to look to buy low on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's especially in a points or OBP league. Because I trust him to hit doubles, triples, and get walks more so than I trust home runs and steals.
Yeah.
So if you're in a standard 5x5 categories league, Puig's a little scarier.
And the thing I love about trading for Puig right now is I've said it before on this podcast. I think he's exactly where Bryce Harper was a year ago.
Yeah.
It's year three.
I just question his makeup. I really do.
Yeah, whatever. The talent is obvious. He's in year three. He's had so much hype, and now the backlash with Puig has been there since the first time he stepped into a major league batter's box. But the backlash is really starting to hit a fever pitch, and it's, you know, Puig's not any good. You know, he's overrated. He doesn't try. All this crap. He's really good. He hasn't been great to start the season. He's been hurt. But I think there's a great buy low opportunity right now.
Well, that's going to do it for today's show. So much for a short show. Sorry, Chris.
It's okay. I don't have anything to do. I'm the only person in the office right now, really. The entire fantasy department's hit the road.
I love the All-Star break. Best week of the year. Yeah. So thanks for everybody. Please keep emailing us, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and put baseball podcast in the subject line. And we'll be back tomorrow with another one.
See you.